How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. I'm actually feeling a lot better. I'm like just super tired now, but just weird because I've slept 13 hours every night. And well, I don't know if you consider what I how I slept on Tuesday night sleeping, but so Tuesday
How
night,
did how yeah, what happened Tuesday night?
Sunday, it was just like Sunday went out for a while, but wasn't like nothing crazy or anything. I went to bed. I woke up Monday. I was just like off. And I'm like, man, this is a pretty bad hangover for, it's a Browns win. So that happens.
Yeah.
It's kind of par for the course, but this feels a little much, but whatever. I was feeling like shit at night. And like I was just like kind of moping around. I wasn't really hungry or anything. And I went to bed and I woke up Monday night. And at like 3:45 in the morning, and dude, I was sick as a dog. Like, you just know when you're, I had like the chills and all that shit, whatever. Slept like shit that night. Woke up the next day, was just miserably sick. Achy, stomach hurts, sore throat, crazy headache. But like terrible fever, obviously, because I was like super hot and super cold, and super hot and super cold. So I tried to just like sleep all day long. I kept taking medicine, trying to sleep. I slept like all day. Tuesday night, I went to bed at like 8:30. I was maybe up from like 5 to 8:30 at one point and went back to bed. I woke up at like, I think it was like 3 a.m. Well, woke up, quote unquote. And I was so wet. I was wearing a hoodie and like sweatpants and socks, trying to like sweat it out.
Yeah.
I was so sweaty that you could literally have wrung the hood of my hoodie. Yeah, I don't even really sweat like that. And I was soaking wet, but I was downstairs in my house. Like, and I remember it was like a dream, but it wasn't. So I don't know if I was hallucinating or it was just like super vivid dream, but I don't sleepwalk or have vivid dreams like that. And I was like looking for a voice. There was like a voice in my house, but I wasn't scared. It was like, like it was somebody who
What?
was supposed to be there. And I like came to or woke up or whatever it was. And I was like standing downstairs in the hallway and I'm like, what the fuck? And I went to the bathroom and like put some water on my face that was just burning up. And I do my eyes were all sunken. My face is all yellow, more yellow than it normally is Asian wise. And I put some water on my face. By the time I got back upstairs, I was freezing cold again. Just miserable. And then I was up and down all night, like sleeping, quote unquote, but I just didn't sleep. But I was fucking terrible.
What was your body temperature like?
I don't know. I didn't have a thermometer. So I was telling somebody today, they're like, what did your temperature get up to? And I was like, well, I don't know because I'm a man and I don't own a thermometer, but I know that I had some kind of fever because I was getting hot and cold and hot and cold, right? And maybe hallucinating, maybe not. And all that slowed down. So I'm going to assume that fever's gone. How about that? I play this thing by my gut. I
I'd
play this
imagine
thing
you
by my
had a
gut.
thermometer at some point, but Jenna probably took
Yeah, it's probably one of the things she took, actually. The
it.
first aid kit's here. So I don't think she took it out of the first aid kit. So I don't know.
I mean, we keep ours separate than the first aid kit. The first aid kit, like, knock on wood, never really gets touched. Nobody's been lacerating
Unless
themselves,
you need
really.
Skittles, then it
Unless
gets
I need
touched.
Skittles. That's in my purse. I keep that in my purse with my diabetes kit. But I mean, like, a couple months ago, I had something similar. Like, I sweat so bad during that issue where, I was up a little over 102, and like I'm still not
Yeah.
allowed to use my comforter until I get that shit dry cleaned, which is like $40 I don't want to spend, but I got to make it happen sometime soon.
I just washed everything today. Today was the day. I just decided I'm not sick anymore. When you just decide it's summertime when like the it's like I'm wearing shorts. I don't give a fuck whether the weather like I'm in on summer now. That's what I did today. I'm like I feel better. I'm making myself feel better. So I cleaned the house and washed everything and I do feel better. I'm just very, very tired. Anyway, Pound Town
Yeah,
Podcast, Will
good for
Burns,
you.
Brian Kenny. It's the reason we have not been around for a while.
Yeah, I did get some texts asking, like, how could you not have a podcast after that win on Sunday?
I know, and I wanted to so bad, dude. I had so many thoughts, and then everything has completely changed since then. There's tons, obviously, tons to talk about from that
Yeah.
perspective. Shout out, by the way, shout out to West Bend Golf Club live mixtapes. I don't know, whoever the fuck else helps us with
Bobo
this goddamn
photo.
podcast. Yeah. We were gonna talk some Browns. Some interesting Guardians news that kind of flew under the radar. A hilarious end to the Michigan sign stealing scandal. I got a couple NBA things I want to touch on. There's a political story that I have to get your thoughts on because it's so goddamn funny,
All right.
and I've been laughing about it all day long. And then I don't know
And I
if we got
sent you a
Reddit.
sketch to watch.
You did. You sent me a sketch, which I have no idea why I had to watch that.
Why would you not?
I can't wait to talk about it.
You're not thanking me for sending that?
I thought I was like looking for some hidden meaning. Like, no, I think Brian just thinks this is funny.
It's so fucking funny.
It is so, I don't know how we're going to explain it on the podcast, but we're going to give it a whirl.
I'll gladly explain it.
I guess, is there any better place to start? That we'll start with the Browns victory. Cause I don't know if we can just like, we can't do this documentary style where, you know, people do the interview and they're like talking about an event as if the things after it have not happened yet. So I don't know if that really works, but just give me your thoughts on that victory on Sunday. Cause that was before all the injury news and all that other shit. That was the moment of like, holy shit, this team's like legit, huh? This is, cause it didn't feel like the Ravens necessarily collapsed in that game. Lamar didn't play bad. He didn't play great in the second half, but he wasn't god awful in the second half. The Browns defense overwhelmed them. Deshaun was good enough. I know the numbers look great, but he was good enough. He wasn't like out of this world in the second half. He was good enough. And that was a monster fucking victory to go into Baltimore and steal one, especially down 14 in the second half.
Yeah, like that. It's crazy to think that a Browns team could be resilient.
That's a great way to put it.
I don't think we've ever seen that. At least, you know, us younger people might remember it from the 80s, but ever since then, there has been no resilient Browns team. So, and we all, when we saw the pick six immediately, were like, well, fuck this. This all sucks. Everything sucks. We're just fucking pretenders again. God damn it. And then, you know, the defense, they still gave up a decent amount of points. But overall, they got shit done. Like, Miles, I know I've been critical in the past. And I've always still felt that Myles Garrett is an all-pro caliber player. But fuck, is he looking good this year. Like, he is. And it's a stacked defensive line. Dalvin Tomlinson looks amazing, which is helping Jordan Elliott to look a lot better than he has in the past. You're getting a lot out of Shelby Harris, Maurice Hurst. Like, those four defensive tackles have been great this year. And last year, defensive tackle was so ignored and it was such a bad situation. And they look so much better. Like, Dalvin Tomlinson is a fucking pros pro. That guy is a beast.
Yeah, he is.
And then you throw in Za'Darius Smith on top of that. Obo Okoronkwo has played a great role rotationally. That depth and giving that to Jim Schwartz has been tremendous. And you've definitely seen a difference in what Myles Garrett is able to do. Like, and Ronnie Stanley, I know he's kind of had a bit of an up and down past couple of years, and he's had a lot of injury issues, but Ronnie Stanley is one of the premier offensive tackles in the NFL.
Yep.
And he got fucking tossed a couple times by Miles. It was ridiculous. He is looking amazing this year. And then our secondary,
How about Newsom, man? How about Newsom? We talked a lot of shit about him last year, and rightly so, because he wasn't handling business. It seems to me like this kid has taken a whole new tack professionally, because I don't know a single person who's seen him out, which is great. And honestly, even if he was, if you're balling like this, I don't give a fuck if you're out, to be 100% honest with you, but I'm glad he's not.
No, yeah, you can go out if you're playing like this, but it seems like he's more... he's more accepting that nickel slot kind of role, where it seemed like he was kind of pissy about it. Almost like an offensive tackle who's like, well, I don't want to play right tackle. Left tackle is the premier position. Like, yes, the outside is the premier position, but in this NFL, it's different now. That slot receiver, that's where you see a lot of these best wide receivers in the NFL playing. Like, Cooper Kupp is predominantly in the slot. This is different now.
Dude, the guy who had the pick six at the beginning of that game, Hamilton, is a dog, and he's a nickel. He's on the inside, and he's a big. You used to never see guys.
Safety.
Yeah, but he plays a lot of nickel too. They have him up on the line against. Yeah, so I mean, and you used to never see that size in a guy in that position, but they now need that size because look at the guys they're throwing in the slot against you. I mean, you can get a DK Metcalf in the slot. They move Amari Cooper to the inside a lot of the time now. It's just like you're saying, the tackle is the perfect way to compare it, because in this day and age, they move the pass rushers around. There's so many weapons on offense, they move them all around. It's not just X and Y anymore. You got to be good on the inside as well. It is awesome to see him embracing that.
Yeah. So I'm happy to see what we've gotten out of him so far. Where's Denzel Ward at this point?
It was a neck injury, right?
Not
concussions. Like, that's good. I don't know. I went back and watched that video. It didn't seem like a cheap shot to me. It just was like a hit. I understand where people could say it was a cheap shot. It just seemed like one of those things where the play was coming to an end. Somebody came and tried to hit somebody off the pile. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't think that it was anything that terrible. Cedric Tillman's shot I am shocked that that didn't get any flags. He could have gotten a flag on the hit for it being a blindside shot. But then also, he stood over him mid-play.
No one has talked about that because everybody was so excited about how the game went. Uh-huh. I tweeted in the middle of the game, probably midway through the third quarter. I don't remember last time a Browns team out-physicaled the Ravens so badly or at all. And they did in that game, but the tone was set on that play. That was the play where maybe the other ones would have came after it, maybe not, but that was the first one. And I was like, oh shit, I love this. I love it. Don't even care if they're throwing a flag there. I don't give a fuck. You need to set that tone against these teams. They've bitched you out for so many years.
Yes. You have to overcome. And there's been games where you think that that we've reset things. There's been games where we actually bullied the Pittsburgh Steelers. And then you come back the next time and they beat the living fuck out of you. So this can't just be a one time and assume that the tides have turned. We have flipped the script. No, this is just what you have to do every time. This is what the AFC North is. This is the culture that both the Ravens and the Steelers have. Not so much the Bengals. They're just flashing and just overall talent offensively. But the Steelers and the Ravens, they've made their bones off of fucking just physicality. So this is what you have to do moving forward. This is not just this game.
You know what, though? The only amendment I'd make to that with the Bengals thing was some of those Andy Dalton years, the defense, Vontaze Burfict and Pac-Man and some of those guys, they were dirty, physical. And that was how they made the playoffs and got to where they were. Because it certainly wasn't – Andy Dalton had some pretty good regular seasons, but he wasn't carrying any team. They had some pretty violent defenses for a couple of years.
Vontaze did throw some cheap shots. And honestly, I loved watching him do it to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I loved watching him throw shots at Antonio Brown. I don't give a fuck. I loved him coming out of Arizona State. I saw a highlight tape of Vontaze Burfict at Arizona State set to a song by the band Perfect Circle called Counting Bodies Like Sheep to the Rhythm of the War Drum. And I was so fucking sold. I wanted Vontaze Burfict bad. And then he went to the Bengals and it was kind of heartbreaking. But I always liked him. And yes, there was some physicality, but you still had, Ocho Cinco and TJ Houshmandzadeh.
Yeah.
Chris Henry, they had a lot of offensive firepower, and Andy Dalton got it done for years.
By the way, you ever think about, because was it James Harrison who put that hit on Antonio Brown, or was it Vontaze Burfict? The one that they say
Burfict.
Okay, so you know that meme that's like the dominoes, like one guy hitting a little domino up to the big one? Think about the fact that possibly that hit from Vontaze Burfict on Antonio Brown ends up being the last domino of him dressed like a fucking idiot golfing 2 weeks ago. I don't know if you saw that video of Antonio Brown.
I did not see that.
They just paired. He's got paired up into a foursome. He was just out golfing in the most ridiculous outfit, trying to golf one-handed. It was so fucking outlandish.
Remember when he went out one night and he gave that guy his pants?
Yes.
And the guy had the phone. His phone was in the pants. I've seen that in comment sections a lot. A lot of people blaming Vontaze Burfict specifically for that.
By the way, I don't know if you know this or not. There was a night, it was back when I had really good sources in the Browns. I was still breaking the stories. Dick Geron was the defensive coordinator that year when Vontaze Burfict came out. I don't know if they still do it this way, but each room made their own draft boards of guys that they wanted, and they would submit those to the scouting department. The scouting department would put it all together, and then the front office would decide how to draft guys. Dick Geron's number one overall guy on his board was Vontaze Burfict.
I mean, I could see it, man. That kid in college, and He didn't take the pre-draft process very seriously. I remember him running horribly, but the actual game tape of him at Arizona State, and I'm not obviously breaking down, Arizona State versus fucking Colorado back then, but I like the highlight tape. That kid, he was mean as shit. He could move when he had to. And if somebody was able to get his head right, the sky was the limit for him.
Do you have any thoughts on the win itself? Before we get to obviously Deshaun being out for the year and what that means moving forward. The other thing I do want to say there is, dude, the offensive tackles played their ass off for guys who, technically are fourth and fifth string guys. They played great. I mean, there was obviously a couple times they got beat, but of course that's going to happen. You're playing the Ravens. First string guys get beat against the Ravens. I mean, they held their fucking own and they were making holes for the running game. And for the most part, Deshaun had a ton of time back there.
Yeah, offensive line did well. Love watching Wyatt Teller just looking for work. Guys that are tied up with the tackle, him coming and cleaning shit up. I love that shit. But overall, I think, I don't know. It's tough. Like a lot of people are saying this is like possibly the best win since 99. Obviously the Pittsburgh playoff win is the best win. Yeah. I don't know if I'd call this one number two either. Like it's great to see us beat the Ravens. It's great to see us come from behind, especially overcoming adversity. And again, being resilient, it's just not something we've seen. I don't know if this win is as great as everyone. It was fucking awesome though. Like it was great. And Deshaun came out and did what I had told you I was hoping he'd do injured. And obviously he still was injured. And he came out and he did it. He dinked and dunked down the field, couple 15 to 17 yard passes to Amari Cooper. But for the most part, 5 to 8 yard dump off to Njoku, a little bit to Elijah Moore. He just kind of, worked it down the field methodically and let his guys make plays. And great, that would have been awesome to continue doing that. but it's just not the case now.
All right, hold on. Before we get there, so are we just splitting hairs here? You're saying, okay, it's not the best win. Obviously, we're going to say the Pittsburgh Steelers beating them in the playoffs, obviously best win. Are we just splitting hairs and you're saying it's not the best, but it's probably like top three or four? Are you saying it's not even in that top group? Because I don't know. I would love to hear an argument for something that is just head and shoulders above that win. I think that one means so much more in a year where you had such high hopes. Obviously, it looks different now after the news of Deshaun. But in that moment, that certainly felt like the best. And if not, it had to be right there, neck and neck with whatever you think would be.
I mean, like that come from behind win versus the Bengals a couple years ago, that was amazing. The one with the last second throw to Donovan Peoples-Jones. I'd say that one certainly rivals this one. It's a very, very good game. It was a huge win for the team. I think it's being a little overhyped.
Well, I just don't even know how you can say that. There hasn't been that many. Like, you can kind of one hand how many monster wins there's been since 99. So it's automatically probably top five.
Beating Pittsburgh, right? To get into the playoffs. That was huge.
Yeah. I mean, and since 99, you could say the goal line stand against Atlanta to get into the playoffs that year.
That was
monster
huge.
Monster run win there, William too. Run. I still think this is bigger. I think this was a bigger one because that team.
It's a top 10 win.
Yeah, I mean, would you be that mad if somebody was like, yeah, it's the fifth best win since 99.
No, I wouldn't get that mad about that.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying. So we're basically splitting hairs here. It was a huge fucking win, one way or the other. But of course, in true Cleveland fashion, we got about 48 hours of being like, hey, man, there might be something here to like, oh, wait, hold on. The quarterback's just fucking out. He's gone again. Gone for the year. Broken shoulder. The hit that he took, it's funny, when he took that hit in the game, immediately, I'm sure many other people did too, I thought, oh boy, is that going to re-injure? Oh, okay, he's back out there throwing again. Whatever, not that big of a deal. Supposedly a completely different injury. I don't know how shoulders work. I guess I'm just going to take the team's word for it on that because I don't know any better. It seems to me that if you have one injury, it could lead to more injuries unless those are completely unrelated. I don't know how that shit works. Either way, it doesn't matter. The motherfucker's gone for the rest of the year. And now you got DTR coming in this week. Completely changes the scope of everything where you were thinking before, man, everything breaks right, possible number one seed. Worst case scenario, you're getting a good run as the number two seed, facing some of those lower level AFC playoff picture teams, which aren't really all playing that great. And who knows, everything breaks right in the playoffs, could be making a run to the Super Bowl. Now that feels pretty lofty. But the playoffs, I think still, no matter what, I'm not letting that expectation go. If you don't get out from under that here, you still got to make the playoffs. You're right there. You only need, there's still quite a few very winnable games. Even if you got to put PJ Walker back in there for the rest of the way, and DTR doesn't look good this week, I still think there's four wins there for you. That's 10 wins that get you in the playoffs.
I like rolling with DTR. I think that's
me too.
Great.
Me too. I'm with you.
You have in PJ Walker. This kid wowed you enough to cut Josh Dobbs, who, goddamn, this Dobbs roller coaster is insane. Of like, at first,
That's such a Browns thing too, right? Because any other team, Josh Dobbs would just fade into oblivion. But of course, because the Browns need a backup quarterback, Josh Dobbs is this miracle worker out of nowhere.
At first, it was like, oh God, what idiots. Look at what he's doing. And then he started playing like shit. They're like, okay, yeah, we get it now. And then he goes back to the Vikings. He has an amazing game. They're like, oh, these fucking idiots. It's such a roller coaster ride. it's wild that is playing out the way that it's playing out. But DTR, he did so well in preseason. He looked great. And then he had one game that was so bad that they benched him for PJ Walker for weeks. And it's like, okay, well, let's at least see what we have in DTR. Give him a shot. I don't know. I kind of think maybe they should have gone with PJ Walker this week and not thrown him to the Wolves, because this will be his first two starts are versus very good physical defenses and in conference rivals. That's rough to baptize the kid by fire like that, especially after watching how the first one went down.
I agree.
Walker this week, and then go to DTR.
So I would agree with you. If that was a thought process at all in the building, I kind of wish they would have went that way, but I'm okay with DTR playing. My only hope is, and we cannot discount this as a possibility because we know how Jimmy Haslam, Paul DePodesta, Andrew Berry, there's egos in all this. I just really hope none of this has anything to do with, hey, we have to show that we made the right move. This kid, even if that's just in the subconscious, they made the decision, they want to prove themselves right. They don't even realize they're trying to do that. I hope that's not the case, because it's the wrong way to go about this. Now it's about wins and losses. Charles Robinson, I don't know if you listened to that on Yahoo earlier today, Charles Robinson is a very good reporter, but does tend to have a pretty anti-negative Brown slant, extremely negative Deshaun slant. He said earlier that he's the guy, this is not reporting, it's just me forming an opinion based on all the people I've talked to around the organization, people very close to Paul DePodesta, people close to Andrew Berry, is that original Dobbs trade was definitely not wanted by Kevin Stefanski and the staff. They wanted to keep him. They loved him. It was not wanted by Andrew Berry. Andrew Berry is in the building and knows how valuable he is. But that was a Paul DePodesta sitting on the West Coast trade saying, get something for the guy, because that draft pick's worth X amount of points on this chart. And now, like you said, not reporting, it's just the opinion he's formed. But sometimes I forget that Paul DePodesta is even a part of this whole thing. And when I listen to that, I'm like, motherfucker. I understand that maybe he's done some really good things in guiding where they're at. You don't know because they won't tell you what he's done and what he hasn't done. But things like that are why old white men sit in their house and rail against analytics. You know what I mean? That's the exact type of thing.
Do you know how much were Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski in on Deshaun Watson? How much of it, do you have any idea? Because I remember hearing Ken Carmen kind of say that Stefanski had gone to Haslam and said, like, this is what we can do with him. This is how much it opens the playbook. This is what I can specifically write up for this guy in particular. So I've just kind of been really wondering who mostly facilitated. I know Haslam had to obviously a game changing, completely different than anything that had been done in football before kind of contract. But was it Haslam? Most of us assume Haslam just said, you better go fucking get this guy.
So that it got mentioned a little bit in that same clip from Charles Robinson earlier. And then from what I've heard early on, my little bit of source I have left in the Browns, which are not all that talkative with me any longer. And then just my own personal opinion, this is what I would say I think happened. Exactly what you just said. Jimmy goes, he's available. We need to figure out how to fucking get him. Kevin, how could we use him? Kevin goes, okay, this is how we could use him. You know what I mean? Kevin doesn't strike me as a jump on the table and scream for personnel moves type of guy. I think that's probably why they like him so much in this organization. I don't think he's going to rock the boat. He's going to work with what he's got. And that's kind of just what he is. He stays even keeled. All right, next guy up, whatever, I'll work with him. It was pretty obvious he didn't want to work with Baker anymore. And it seemed like that Baker's welcome inside the organization is pretty much was gone. So he was probably pretty happy to draw. I mean, I'd imagine any coach would be like, fuck, this dude's a weapon. I'll draw plays for him for sure. I've also heard some rumblings that Andrew Berry was not the most hyped on this move, but that it came from Jimmy and Paul DePodesta. Andrew Berry goes, okay, we'll figure out what it takes to make it happen. So, but I also think Andrew Berry is the type of guy who's going to jump on the table and be like, no, let's not do this. Cause none of those guys are that way. You know what I mean? Jimmy is that way. And Jimmy forms an organization the way he does, which has been dog shit for a very long time and seems to be working out all right now, but has also put us in a situation where there's no backup quarterback right now too.
Yeah. I've just been kind of wondering it at who to blame, because it is football. People get hurt, but this guy needs to learn how to fucking protect himself, because it's been a lot of injuries and he looked like shit in the first half. Again, second half comes out 14 for 14. That's great. But again, And maybe it is his shoulder limiting him. It was a lot of just short passes, dinking and dunking. It's not the superstar $230 million guy that you were hoping for. He didn't come out and do the Titan stuff where he looked like a complete superstar and a game changer. So
can I throw a stat at you, though? Do you know he's the number one quarterback in the NFL in the fourth quarter?
He's the number one quarterback
number in the fourth quarter? Number one in the NFL, like on every statistical, his like completion percentage, his QBR, his EPA, like everything.
That's nothing but a fucking testament to how bad he is for the other three quarters, because overall his numbers are dog shit. If you're going to be the number one fourth quarter quarterback and you're throwing for 180 yards and a touchdown, it's like, okay, well, you threw for 45 yards the rest of the fucking game, asshole. Like,
it's almost like that. It's almost like the Hopkins quote where he's like, you know, I kind of feel like the arsonist who got put out his own fire and got patted on the back for it. That has been somewhat of what Deshaun's been. But, you know, as much as we can discount, and I don't want to get on here and discount it too much, because it was good to see him play that well. And it is nice to see those numbers. He's got to be better. I don't understand the whole thing of you just be like, oh, he's always been a slow starter. That's not slow start. That is a dog shit quarterback in the first half of football games. He's bad. He's very bad at football.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it's a different guy in the second half. It's like, I don't know what that is. Like, let him play a first half against, you know, Trinity High School or something in the practice field before he actually goes out and plays a game. I don't know what you have to do, but how you get that guy ready. But now it doesn't matter because he's gone for the rest of the year. Now it's going to be almost three full seasons he hasn't played.
Yeah.
And in that same
year, right back to talking about fucking rust.
Rust. And the less you play, you know, maybe it's just anecdotal, but the less you play, the easier it seems for you to get hurt, because your body's not used to taking the pounding that has been taken throughout your entire football career. And the dude's rapidly approaching 30 years old. So, you know, we can sit here and be every other radio show and every other podcast and rail against the trade, but he's here. This is what it is. They can't even, and I don't know if this is 100% true, but I was listening to something earlier today that they were saying cap-wise, they can't even draft a first-round quarterback in the next 2 years. Not that they would, but they can't even draft one because they can't fit it cap-wise, because that's how much, you know, a quarterback at the top of the first round would make guaranteed money-wise. That's pretty fucking nuts, man.
I don't love hearing that. I don't love hearing that at all. I mean, obviously they don't have a first round pick.
And theoretically with this defense and the weapons they have, even if there's a fall off somewhat next year, they're not going to have a great pick. You know what I mean? It's going to be somewhere in the back half of the first round anyway.
And I mean, it's turning into $65 million. And I doubt you're going to restructure that again, because then you're just adding more years.
That's the problem now, is the years.
Yeah. And like you said, he's approaching 30. He's been hurt a bunch this year. It doesn't seem like he really knows how to protect himself all that well. Even though, you know, watching him slide the one time a yard short of a first down was like, okay, maybe he's a little bit scared. But at the same time, you should probably be a little more scared. Like, I don't know, man. Figure it out. At the end of the day, like, I don't think we need to necessarily be logical, because the means to get to where we are now were so great that the ends need to be justified. And I don't think we need to logically sit here and go, well, I mean, he's hurt. It's like, I don't fucking care. If you're not actually doing it, if you're not making shit happen, I don't care. Make shit happen. Find a way. Don't care.
I'm right there with you. Like I said, at the beginning of the podcast, there is no excuses anymore. You got to make the playoffs this year. Like, there, I don't give a fuck that Nick Chubb went down and Conklin went down and Sean Watson went down. You have the opportunities right there in front of you. You have to make the playoffs. I think I've been somewhat of a Kevin Stefanski supporter. Actually, I think I've been pretty even keeled on him, given, you know, criticizing when it should be criticized and giving him credit when he should as well. This show you're the coach you are. You know what I mean? That some people think you are and that you think you are. Make the playoffs with this team. Fuck, make the playoffs and win a game with this team. You earn yourself a goddamn extension. Because you might win coach of the year if you does some shit like that. You know what I mean? The opportunities there in front of you. I just, as a fan, I don't give a fuck anymore about the excuses. It's been so many years of, well, this went wrong, or if this would have happened, if this guy didn't get injured, and wait till we get these draft picks in. And like, dude, I'm done with all that shit. It's here. Win football games, which I still think they're going to. Like I said, I think they're going to win this Sunday. I do. I actually think they're going to win this Sunday, because I think, if you look at all those, like the luck rankings, and like the Pittsburgh Steelers have been a top four luckiest team in the NFL. The Browns have been one of the more unlucky teams on the defensive side of the football. Most of that's turnovers. Those numbers are starting to shift their way. I don't know. It just feels like, unless DTR goes out there and completely shits down his leg again, this is probably a victory. Then you're sitting at 7-3. And if you don't make the playoffs from there, they need a fucking clean house.
Yeah. And I mean, they are great at home as well. So
yes. Yep.
They've been really good at home. And I think that this defense, everybody just keeps saying that this defense is different. The culture is different. The relationships among the players are different. It's not a bunch of mercenaries anymore. It's a team that has become really much, very much a unit. And they're everywhere. All these fucking, you know, Baskin and Phelps kind of shows wants to give them a name of some sort. whatever. But like, they are starting to act and need to continue to embrace the identity of one of those named defenses. You've seen it before. You've seen how bad quarterbacks can be carried by phenomenal defenses. Fucking Brad Johnson was a Super Bowl quarterback. You can go out to Trent Dilfer. Some of these teams in the past, the defense has embraced that this is our fucking show. This is an offensive league, but we are the showstoppers. And I think that the defense needs to really embrace that kind of persona, and they need to carry this team, because at the end of the day, we're going back to old school football. It's defense and it's running the ball.
If I told you the rest of the season, playoffs included, that DTR is going to give you a 3-1, let's go 4-1 touchdown interception ratio. That means rushing and passing. Let's say he has the rest of the year, he only has 12 touchdowns, but only has 3 turnovers. Where do you think that? I think that takes him really fucking far. Like, I mean, that takes him in the playoffs, probably a win. Maybe towards a Super Bowl. I mean, that's how little I think it takes for this defense to advance you that far.
I would tend to agree. The running game needs to keep shining. That can't fall off. If that's the case, the defense looks the way that they have. And, you know, at times they've put up some points, but they also have redeemed themselves in a lot of ways. Other than that Colts game, you know, they haven't had a lot of points, crazy amounts of points put up against them. Just, you know, keep getting, doing what you got to do. And if they keep getting kind of lucky, like that Greg Newsom interception, you know, you make your own luck. That's Okoronkwo getting that hand up and just making a fucking play, and Newsom being in the right place, right time, athletic enough to get in the end zone. I think the team, they do have it in them.
All right. So I want to put a bow on this whole Browns part with a tweet that I saw this is the most typical Browns fan worst case scenario, when it's not at all worst case scenario. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's the best case scenario. Okay. You know what the best case scenario is? Some guy said the worst case scenario is DTR plays so well and they advance so far into the playoffs that next year you have a decision to make, which they wouldn't. They would still bring Watson to be the starter because they paid him all that money, but you would have an off ramp away from Watson if things don't work out. Best case scenario really is, and it's maybe a smidgen of reality and not as big as it once was, but it's still a smidgen of reality. It possibly happened. Is they make some kind of miracle run and they win a Super Bowl without Deshaun Watson as the quarterback this year, because it would placate both sides of the fan base, right? I don't think there's anybody who is a Watson fan who's like, I'm not going to love the Super Bowl if he's not there. Fuck that. They're Browns fans. They're going to love the Super Bowl one way or the other. And there's a whole section of fans who are going to be like, fuck, I actually can cheer for the Super Bowl because Watson isn't the guy leading them there. I mean, that is the apex A1 best case scenario you could possibly ever have. And then you have the ring, and then whatever happens with Watson after that, whatever the fuck, who cares, right? Because it's like the Cavs thing. They got their ring. I'd love more, but we're not going to be greedy. We don't get championships here. You know what I mean? That's the Disney movie.
I mean, yeah, like that would be, I would certainly enjoy the Super Bowl more if it was one without Deshaun Watson. I would laugh my ass off that they bring that guy in and then they win without him.
Yeah, that would be the most Cleveland Browns thing of all time.
And then you have a legitimate, like, DTR Watson. You have to keep Watson, and then DTR goes and excels somewhere else. Like, that would be fucking, I mean, it's definitely a long shot based off of one NFL game, but like, yeah, that would be a whole bunch of fun, and also not fun with how that would just blow everything up if DTR becomes a fucking superstar.
I don't think this will be a long one. So before we got to like cut this and start it back up, because I don't pay for the premium. The Guardians DFA'd Cal Quantrill.
Yeah.
Which flew under the radar a little bit, but I think it was surprising to everybody who was a little more in the know. A, because the Bieber situation is still up in the air, but B, because I saw TJ Zuppi tweeting about it, which we always plug the Selby's Godcast, which our boy, DJ Duck Diggity or whatever the hell his name is, DM me. He was like, hey, what's the name of that podcast? I send it to him. TJ was saying, like, this isn't a case of them messing with the, you know, the whatever the clock on the players or anything, but it just goes to show you how when you mess with clocks, things like this can happen. It'd be really weird if they didn't get anything for Cal Quantrill, because he felt like a piece you could at least trade for something.
Yeah, he's not that old. He was very injury prone and looked like garbage most of the year. He had a decent September. I was really shocked by that move. I guess it's kind of to make room on the 40 man for Rule 5 players and to protect them. But
they're protecting Oscar Gonzalez still.
I mean, I still think he's got potential. I don't want him completely out of town like a lot of people do. And for the reasons that Andre said, like I figured he would regress. I was right about that. Andre was wrong about that. But he does have the ability to barrel up the ball. He has shown maturity in clutch situations. He hasn't necessarily shown maturity and restraint at the plate in his pitch selection by any means. It's god awful. But he still is really young. He still is a freak of an athlete. I mean, the guy's like 6'4", 240, and he's fast. He's got speed. There's a lot of tools to like, and he could be a project player, and it's not like he's expensive. I get keeping a 40-man roster spot for him for sure. Is Cam Gallagher still on the roster? Is he still on our 40-man? If so, then that's like the guy that it's like, what are you doing in Major League Baseball?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he's not. I think he got DFA'd.
Good. Okay. Man, but like Quantrill is like a piece of the actual rotation, dude. Like I know the three young kids came up and
he elected
well.
For free. If last Friday they DFA'd Cam Gallagher and he elected to become a free agent. Good luck.
Yeah, fuck off.
All right, hey, let me stop that. Let me stop this and we'll jump right back in.
All right.
Remember where you're at there.
All right.
Just join right back in the meeting.
All right.
All right. Cal Quantrill. After my dump break, go.
I don't see I don't see how he couldn't have been an asset in the bullpen, a bullpen that struggled a whole bunch, maybe a long reliever. I know Xavion Curry did carve out a spot for himself and look pretty good in all relief efforts as opposed to starting last year. But I mean, for $6.6 million, that's not a crazy amount. Unless you're making a run for somebody, I don't get this move. Something about his health that we don't.
Well, the other thing here is they had a press conference and they were asked about the whole Bally Sports Diamond thing. And them and the Rangers, the two teams, were supposedly getting their contracts axed. So that's just revenue gone. And then when asked about it, he said, yeah, it makes for a lot of uncertainty. And that uncertainty makes it difficult for us to project our revenue moving forward, which makes it very difficult for us to make the moves we want to make, keep the players we want to keep, which I guess understandable. But, you know, James Karinchak's on the 40-man. Maybe I'm stupid here, but I would imagine Quantrill, with starting pitching being at such a high value and how bad Karinchak was, I would think Quantrill would have more of a value in a trade market than Karinchak, right? Because they can't be thinking to keep Karinchak, or you'd think they'd want to trade him.
Karinchak is still younger, and
by how much? I don't know how old either of those guys are.
I want to say Karinchak's about 25, and Quantrill's going to be 29, I think. So,
So that is a pretty big difference.
I could be wrong. Let's double check. James Karinchak,
28 for Karinchak.
Oh shit! Well then, fuck him.
And Quantrill is, I think, the same age. Yeah, they're both 28.
Well, then that makes less sense to me. I definitely thought Karinchak was younger. If he's 28, then yeah, you should be looking to get him off the roster because he's just shown to be too much of a roller coaster ride. I mean, shit, we all assumed it was spider tack, and then he comes back and looked fucking great in 2022. I don't know what is going on with that guy, and he's unreliable. You can't just count on him. Quantrill was another guy, but Quantrill has a better track record as well. Quantrill looked solid for a while. He was a good, really good number four to have, and then a pretty solid number three to have in your rotation even.
What was he? He was 15-5 before the year before last, which, you know, some of that was the fact that they just won a ton of games that he was in. They won a ton of tight games, but I think he had like a sub-4 ERA.
Yeah.
He's not great. But like I said, I'm not even looking at either of those guys as a piece for this team moving forward. I was looking at both. I thought both those guys would be guys they tried to trade. They just seem like those type of things.
The health stuff could play more of a role than we realize. Because if you remember, Quantrill came back multiple times, got shelled, went back, and took more time off. Like, it was a several time thing that he came back, got his ass kicked, went back to the IR, or IL, or whatever they call it now. It happened multiple times. So maybe there is something underlying, but at the same time, you got to imagine Bieber's gone unless his health is so bad that now they can't get enough for him and they might just ride with it. I'd be shocked if they did that and didn't try to get something.
Maybe they sign him to like a 1-1, like a 1-year deal with a player option. And even then you'd think he'd probably still be a trade candidate from trade deadline time. You know what I mean?
I mean, our one source, the way he described it, there's no fucking way Shane Bieber is ever signing back in Cleveland.
Yep.
His agent is Drew Rosenhaus. His
wife's and that's from like LA, right?
Yes. Yeah. And seems to like things. And Drew Rosenhaus is like,
yo, what bitch don't, baseball. You know what I'm saying? Bitches be shopping.
Women be shopping is one of my fantasy football team names. But yeah, like, I mean, Drew Rosenhaus has to make a splash. He's new to baseball. Shane Bieber is like one of his bigger profile guys. Like, he has to do it. So there's no fucking way he ever signs back in Cleveland. But at the same time, he looked so bad last year that how much do you give for him?
Good question. It's a good question.
But keeping Quantrill makes more sense with all that. Like, I don't know. It has to be his health. That's the only thing that makes sense to me. And as far as money goes, as far as losing Bally's, what's his tits for then? We brought in Big Dick Money Daddy.
Blitzer?
Blitzer. He's supposed to be the sugar daddy.
When does that? Kicks in for like 2 more years, right?
Is it 2? I thought it was 2 more years before he could get more equity in the team. I thought he.
Yeah, but I think that was part of the reporting around that was the feeling was he wasn't going to give more until he had that equity. He was going to keep his minority stake and probably stay out of it, and then move forward once he actually had that equity. But yeah, I guess you never know. He could be like, "Fuck that! I want to play around in baseball now." He's in every goddamn sport at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. If that's the case and they're extra worried about money, I am nervous to see how this all plays out.
Yeah, me too. But it is interesting because I didn't really get talked about a whole lot. And he was a name that I know was decent. You know, it wasn't terrible. It just was weird to just let him walk like that. Especially because that was a guy who was rumored to be like a piece that could be traded at the deadline last year.
Yeah.
And he had all the injury stuff and, you know, whatever.
Shit, man. I've stuck behind the Dolans for quite a bit. I personally think they should be about an $80, $90 million payroll. I get being under 100, but if they go lower than that at this point with what they've got, then motherfuckers.
Yeah. Just a hilarious end, by the way. I don't have a huge take on this, but a hilarious end of the Michigan sign stealing scandal after Michigan was like, somebody said it best. I don't remember who tweeted it. And I'm ripping your tweet off, but after Michigan was touting their law firm like they're a 5-star recruit, like all their Michigan fans. And there was like fan fiction being wrote on the message boards about Ryan Day being indicted in RICO charges. Uh-huh. And then in the end, Harbaugh just goes, yep, I'll take that 3-game suspension. You're right. And it was apparently just a handshake deal so that the Big Ten said, we won't even investigate anything any further. We'll just back away if you take the 3-game deal. And that doesn't apply to the NCAA. So there could be more coming down the line. But yeah. Just for such an the banter back and forth between the two like fan bases, especially for Michigan, who's tried to maintain this faux moral high ground for so long, is just so goddamn funny to watch their team and just like pull the rug out from under them and be like, no, it's okay. We'll take that.
Yeah. Hilarious. I mean, and he's going to miss the Ohio State game. And I'd be shocked if they made the playoffs without him at the helm.
They didn't look great against Penn State, but then again, I don't know how good Penn State really is either. You know what I mean?
That kid from Medina is rough.
He's bad, and he was so fucking good in high school. So goddamn.
I mean,
he's
got time. Like it's you know. But right now, he's a rough option to have.
Yeah,
if you're Penn State, and I want to root for the kid, but fuck, the couple games I've watched at Penn State, he has not looked good. So I don't know, man. It's hilarious that he would just be like, oh, yeah, stop looking at stuff, please. I'll take that deal. Just you're not going to look anymore? Okay.
My favorite tweet was the one guy who tweeted, Jim Harbaugh at the local Hooters with ranch on his chin screaming out the plays before they happened. That's what great. A weirdo. Before we get to your sketch you made me watch, there was two things in the NBA I wanted to ask you if you saw. One, did you see Draymond choking Rudy Gobert?
Yes.
5-game suspension. The NBA just does not give a fuck about anything, apparently. That's insane that he only got 5 games. Or I guess you do have to factor in that nobody likes Rudy Gobert. Probably plays into it.
Rudy Gobert really wasn't involved too much in that scrap either. Like, Rudy Gobert was just some giant French onlooker, pretty much. And he just fucking...
Did you see Patrick? Did you see Patrick Beverly describing it on the Pat Bev pod?
No, I started watching it and then I had a call coming at work.
I'll send you the link. It's so funny him describing it. He was like, he's talking about Carl Anthony Towns, like, cat's bogus, because Carl Anthony Towns was pretending he was gonna do something. Dude, if someone's choking your teammate, you don't throw a punch, you're a pussy. First of all, let's put that up. He's like, cat's bogus. He's like, and he knew, Draymond just saw an opportunity. He knew they don't like Rudy. So he just came and he's like, I'm going to choke that boy up. He just went and choked him. He's like, no, he knew nobody was going to do anything about it. He's like, it was bogus. Like,
Jose knocking out Tim Anderson. Nobody did anything after Tim Anderson got knocked out. Nobody. There wasn't even a fucking pitch thrown at anybody the next day. It was completely accepted in the White Sox dugout of that happened. And we're moving on.
Do you think people don't like Rudy Gobert because he's French or because he's a douchebag, or is he just a douchebag because he's French?
I think it's part that. I think a lot of people, especially, like, I mean, we all know that the Jazz turned on him because of that COVID bullshit that he pulled.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of, maybe not even just French, but like there's a lot of European and cultural things that I just can't see going well.
In an NBA locker room.
Yeah. Like, I just,
I
bet you he smokes cigarettes and shit like that.
They're all blasting NBA young boy and he's like,
yeah, smoking cigarettes and drinking wine.
Turn this off. All right. Deep the other thing, baguettes. I would be very surprised if you saw this, but this is nuts. And it's not, all right. So apparently, this is from a Reddit user. So maybe this is our Reddit story. I don't know. This is from a Reddit user. And the title is, should the Brooklyn Nets kill 5 of their players to trigger a disaster draft and improve their roster? So it says the NBA disaster draft is a contingency plan to be used when 5 or more players on a team have died or have been dismembered. In the draft, apparently this is true.
Or dismembered.
So if five guys physically cannot play anymore in the draft, team whose players died will be able to draft the amount of players from the other teams equivalent to how many they had lost. The other teams are only allowed to protect 5 players from being drafted, but many teams still have a good 6th man or other players available. With the Nets having bad contracts and underperforming, such as Ben Simmons, they could also just kill the 2-way players and the bench warmers to fill out those 5 spots and get a disaster draft. This is the best part. Ready? He says, also, according to Ben Simmons, the team would also get the 1st-round pick in next year's draft. Now, this next draft class is also weak, so I could understand their hesitancy. And being a repeat offender, that is, killing 5 players in your team in 2 separate occasions could raise some eyebrows. but this could still greatly improve them. No doubt killing your players with bad contracts and then killing your bench warmers for 6 men would greatly improve them and other teams. What do you guys think? And should any other teams do this, and who should they kill? Amazing post.
Incredible.
But I gotta tell you, the Cavs aren't playing so well. I would not be mad if a couple of them got dismembered and they had to go into a draft. I'm not saying people should. I'm just saying.
Which 5 would you kill / dismember?
Well, at this point, I don't know if you could do 5. Let me pull up the roster. Fuck it. Let's actually do this.
Let's see who needs to die.
Let's kill off 5 Cavs players. Because there are some really good benches out there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I really like George Niang, but he's like a minus 52 right now, I think. Niang could be in that conversation. Tristan Thompson, I like his toughness, but he's, look, the Kardashians are probably already trying to have him killed.
He's got to die.
Never heard of Craig Porter. I have heard of Craig Porter. He came in those 2 games, but I'm sorry, dude, you got to go. Craig Porter, two-way player. He's got to go. So that's two.
Okay.
Isaiah Mobley. We don't need two Mobleys.
You see, maybe it would inspire Evan Mobley.
It's true. Maybe he'd get...
One way or the other. Either he's going to spiral or it's going to inspire him.
How many movies have we seen where someone's brother, dog, significant other gets killed and they turn into an absolute animal and go out for revenge? I think that's part of this. We take him out.
What if we kill Isaiah Mobley and then he comes back as a ghost that helps the team, like in the movie Sixth Man with Marlon Wayans?
Even better. I mean, now we're just...
You've seen that movie?
Yeah, I've seen that movie.
That's a great fucking movie.
I don't know if it's a great fucking movie.
But I love that movie. I haven't seen it in forever. I'm going to rewatch it.
So that's three. Caris LeVert, dead. Kill him. Hate Caris LeVert so much.
Wow, okay.
I get it. He's a big-time contributor, and he's actually been playing decently well. He's got to go. So that's four. And you know what? Let's go with... Not Ricky Rubio. He's having mental health issues, and we're going to be sensitive to that. We'll go with Dean Wade. My ex used to think he was hot. He can die. How about that? There's five. All five. Now we trigger a disaster draft, baby. Let's go shopping.
All right. We did it.
All right. Anyway, I just wanted to read that to you. I thought it was pretty funny.
That's hilarious.
All right. So you texted me earlier. You said, I'm going to read the exact verbiage here. And you said, if you get a chance, watch this so we can talk about it. And the title is Second Chance Theater, Benjamin Franklin, Late Night with Seth Meyers. I would like for you to try to explain this and what it was, because I was looking for a deeper meaning in the beginning and not understanding what I'm missing. And then I just realized it's just how fucking ridiculous it is.
That's the best part. Okay, so this was shown to me years ago by my buddy Steve Kessler, former head brewer at Saucy Brewworks, current head brewer at Rocky River Brewing Company. Shout out, Steve. And his mom, pod mom, Karen Kessler.
I was just going to say, that's our pod brother.
So he showed this to me. And what it is on Seth Meyers, who used to be the head writer at SNL, during a really good era with Will Forte and Jason Sudeikis and Bill Hader and all those guys, Fred Armisen, they pitch a bunch of sketches. And most of it is like, you know, you have these things that make you laugh really hard. And then when you're trying to describe it to others, everybody's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Yeah. And this is clearly the ultimate version of that. Because he had this sketch stuck in his head and he repeatedly pitched it. And everybody's like, stop pitching Benjamin Franklin. It's not going to work. And then finally, Seth Meyers gets his own late night show and he starts up this segment called Second Chance Theater, where he lets the people from SNL come on and actually do the sketch. So Benjamin Franklin is Will Forte with like a big beard and like a bald cap on and longer hair. So he's got the Benjamin Franklin hair, and that's like it. And then he's wearing like a dress that is clearly from like the 1700s, and makeup and glasses. And it's like Fred Armisen and Vanessa Bayer sitting at a table with Jason Sudeikis. And they say, you know, we were setting you up with this girl. And then Will Forte comes in, and the rest of the sketch is not like a bunch of Benjamin Franklin based jokes.
No,
her name is Benjamin Franklin and she's got the bald cap and hair. And that is the extent of the Benjamin Franklin references. That's it. Everything else is just Will Forte is Benjamin Franklin aggressively flirting with Jason Sudeikis, who is aggressively flirting back. Like, they get very sexual and touchy feely immediately.
They make out in it.
And the way they make out is like Will Forte just opens his mouth as wide as he can, and Jason Sudeikis just leans in and like parks his lips inside of his. And like, it's, and this sketch is so long. It's like over 8 minutes long. It's incredibly long. And it is absolute nonsense and just something to indulge Will Forte, who's one of my favorites. And it's just fucking hilarious. You have to watch it.
It is. And the funny thing is, it's so raunchy. You could see that they probably would have had to tone it down somewhat, like, especially in the very, even before Benjamin Franklin comes out, which I don't know if you like, if people are getting what you're describing, it's literally just Benjamin Franklin making a girl voice and being overly flirtatious. Essentially, that's all it is.
Like, not even trying to act like Benjamin Franklin. It's not like she talks about almanacs and kites and Philadelphia. There's no Benjamin Franklin references at all. Her personality does not mirror Benjamin Franklin one single bit. She's like, Will Forte, being this woman that is very stupid and just like, oh, Grady. Like her voice is horrible. It's so fucking funny.
It's, and that was the thing that kept getting me. I'm like, there's got to be something more to the Benjamin Franklin part. No, it's just literally a woman.
That is the start and stop of the Benjamin Franklin part of Benjamin Franklin.
They're like, and she's got a rack, like how you like. He's like, flat as a board. Exactly. It's so dumb.
It's just, I would love to see it pitched to the table. Like, I'm going to come out dressed as a female Ben Franklin. Benjamin Franklin. The whole thing had to have just been based on thinking the name Benjamin Franklin was hilarious.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, and you know why? You know that struck a chord with me? And I was wondering if maybe I said this to you before, but I don't think I have. LBG. We'll keep that as an inside joke for me. I don't want to go into too much detail there. LBG sends me memes all the time of people hitting their weed pens, and they call them Benjamin Franklins, and I fucking love it. It's my favorite thing on the face of the earth for some reason. Every time someone has, I'm like, can I hit your Benjamin Franklin? I think it's so funny to me for some reason. When you sent that to me, I figured that's what you were referencing, but like, no, I've never said that to you.
Not at all. I had never heard that before. That's great though.
Yeah, Benjamin Franklin, baby.
It's such nonsense, that sketch. I love it.
It's so good.
There's another sketch from that Second Chance Theater I watched. It's like 12 minutes long. It's so long. And it's Jason Sudeikis as a guy in a coffee shop who's mad at everybody because they're not going up to the bulletin board and taking like the little tab for juggling lessons. And again, like these Second Chance Theater things, like they're SNL sketches are never this long, 8-12 minutes.
Yeah, no.
They're just the most indulgent things for these dudes. And it's so fucking funny. And they're only things that are funny to very select people. And Will Forte, you know me, MacGruber is like one of my all time favorites.
Yeah.
Will Forte just absolutely kills me.
I forgot how funny MacGruber was till we rewatched it that one night. And god damn, is that movie funny?
So fucking funny.
So funny. Oh man. I always think about those, like those, you know, writers' meetings, into the writers' room, you got a pitch. Some of the ideas, because obviously even some of the stuff that makes it to air is still so ridiculous.
Yes.
So you gotta think some of the stuff that just dies in a vine is like, I didn't think of anything this week. I'm just going to freestyle. I'm just going to come up with, I had this one idea that I literally wrote this down the other night because I've been writing a lot more and I've been trying to write down anything that comes to my head that I think is interesting, ridiculous, whatever. So I just like whole notepad of just ideas. And maybe I've seen this before, maybe I haven't. But I had this idea of a guy who has a ton of lower back hair and shaves it into the shape of a thong. So every time he's wearing jeans, it looks like there's a hair thong coming out of it. and like, so that's like, I didn't think of my idea that week. And I just come with, that's all I have. And I just freestyle and build an idea around that one stupid premise.
How have we never seen one fraternity boy on Instagram?
I've never seen that.
Right? With a hair thong. I'm shocked.
Maybe the young guys just don't have enough of the lower back hair yet.
Well, there's some of them out there that have to. Some fucking Serbian kid.
I had a buddy, we were out on the boat, I think it was his last summer, and dude, it looked like he was smuggling squirrels in the back of his pants. Dude, he had so much lower back hair, it was frightening. And I finally just had to say, you know, usually you wouldn't say anything because you don't want anybody to feel bad, but he's, you know, he's married and whatever. I'm like, fuck it. I'm like, bro, you gotta shave that shit, that's insane. He goes, if I shaved it, my wife would think I was cheating.
I've got a hairy back, but it's mostly just like, it looks like wings are sprouting.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just up the sides in the middle.
This is a very weird thing. Like, I just saw it this week. Have you ever seen, there's like an old Davy Page Views, like Dave Portnoy thing, where it's like him rising like a phoenix with like fiery wings. It was like a pretty, if you saw it, you'd be like, oh yeah, okay, I've seen that on the internet before. I didn't realize what that was. Apparently, that is his chest hair. And I went back and looked. His chest hair really does look like a phoenix rising. Like, I don't think he shaves it that way. It's just naturally like a phoenix.
I don't know. Mine looks like a butterfly.
Okay. So that must be a decently, I don't have a lot of chest hair. So
I got a bunch.
Yeah. I got really long nipple hairs if I don't shave them.
I do too.
Yeah.
They're like crazy long. It's weird how much longer the nipple hair gets than the rest of my chest hair.
Yeah. Well, especially because I don't have any rest of my chest hair, so it's just a bunch
just
of
nips.
Yeah, it looks just
like a frame on a picture around your nipples.
My nipples look like Homer Simpson's head. Just think of a long ass nipplers. All right, I think we will have time for a Reddit story if you have one, but I wanted to run this by you. Did you see, I don't really have a much more to this than just how ridiculous is, you know, the George Santos, that fucking lying weirdo.
Oh, yeah.
What is he, the House of Representatives or whatever? I don't know what he's
saying.
Yeah. Did you see today that they sent back the ethics report on him? Did you see all the shit that was in it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, dude. So he announced finally today, because he was saying he wasn't going to step down. He was going to run for re-election. He finally announced today he's not running for re-election because the ethics report has things such as George Santos used campaign funds to pay for OnlyFans, Botox, and Sephora. he spent $4,100 at Hermes and then spent on small, by this was a $25,000 wire transfer to his campaign account, and then he automatically transferred to his account and just started spending it on things. He spent smaller purchases at OnlyFans, Sephora, meals, and parking. Let's see what else is really funny in here. Oh, this is just another list of some of the other lies, because some of his lies are just so awesome. And they're just they've all been proven false. His mother died as a result of 9/11. Didn't happen. Claimed he graduated from Baruch College, a college he never even attended.
Okay.
Told multiple people that he was the quote star on the Baruch volleyball team. Once again, did not attend the college. Baruch? I think that's how you say that. He ran a Ponzi scheme that was shut down by the SEC.
Nice.
Santos said his grandparents survived the Holocaust as Ukrainian Jewish refugees from Belgium. He went on to explain that he was Jew-ish. Nobody's family is Jewish. And then Santos said he lost 4 employees at the Pulse nightclub shooting, but none of the 49 who died there worked with him. So this guy just is. He also used campaign funds for personal gain, committed fraud. Filed false reports to the FEC. I mean, he's just an all-around big piece of shit. Remember, he did the GoFundMe. He ripped off somebody off GoFundMe. I mean, this guy's an all-time scumbag. But using campaign funds on OnlyFans is top-notch. That's good stuff.
Goddamn. He's fantastic. I like him.
I like him because he is a mere right up to our electorate in this country. You know what I mean? Like, oh, you think we really are the smartest country in the world? Everybody should be able to vote. This is who you pick. Look at him. Look at him and watch him. Watch his shiny plastic face. Yeah, he's somewhere in New York, I think.
Unreal.
Crazy. You got a Reddit story?
I have a really long one and a really short one. Which one do you prefer?
Let's do the short one because my throat is running out of steam here. That's all what right. She said.
When I was 6 years old, I went to the shopping mall with my parents, which was on the opposite side of a large city. There were 3 levels in the shopping mall, and exiting them led to the same looking car parks. My parents parked on the 2nd floor. We had an understanding that if any of us got lost, then we'd meet up in front of the car. I strayed off and went back to the car following protocol. Lo and behold, I searched all over the parking lot and couldn't find the family car, not knowing that they were on the 2nd floor instead of the 3rd floor. I watched enough movies to understand that I must have been kicked out of the home. I have to adapt, I thought. So I drank water from the bathroom taps and eyed the trash can to fish out freshly thrown out food. I also shoplifted a small blanket and set up camp inside a toilet cubicle. I did this for most of the day until my parents frantically found me by yelling my name inside the bathroom I set camp in. I left the blanket in the cubicle and got out. I still kept this as a secret from them to this very day.
How old was he?
6 years old.
I mean, first of all, what a resourceful little guy. Girl? Was it?
That is resourceful, but also, what kind of fucking maniac has that survival instinct kick in that quick?
I mean, you've gone through some shit by 6 years old. If that is right away,
you stole a fucking toilet stall blanket and you're eyeing the trash cans for food.
That's that pretty quick. Fucking wild.
I mean, it had to be within hours. Yeah.
That's crazy. And did you ever get lost as a kid? Your parents ever lose you?
I did. I got kind of lost for a very short period of time in a store because I was kind of like fucking around and my mom had my younger sister and they walked through one of those automatic doors and the doors closed and I was on the other side and I wasn't heavy enough as a small child to trigger it. And my mom didn't realize for a while, but like I went and I like hid inside of like a one of those circular clothing racks. And then my mom couldn't find me after that. And then eventually we reunited, of course.
How long do you think you were lost there?
10 minutes.
Were you freaking out?
Yes.
Yeah. As a kid, that shit's scary, dude.
Yeah.
When I was, I don't know, I would say I was probably like 7 or 8, if I had to guess. 8 would be 4th grade. Maybe even younger, right? Or is 8? No, 8 would be... 92, that'd be 2nd grade. That's probably about right. That's probably 7 or 8 years old. I had 2 stepbrothers, and they had obviously had a different grandma than me, and it was summertime, and there was nobody to watch me, so I was going to go stay at their grandma's house, which is in Willowick. We lived in Eastlake. So they took me over there, and she had a bike in her garage, and she was like, do you want to go play up at the school? It's right around the corner. Show you how to get there. She walked me up there as I rode the bike, and I was being Mr. Big Shot. I was like, yeah, no, it's right around the corner. I got this. No big deal. So I went up there with a basketball, and I was playing basketball. I put it back in my little backpack when I was done and went to ride back to her house. I started riding, and I took the turn, I can't find this house. Now I don't know where the fuck I'm at. This is, you know, I don't think second graders really have cell phones now, but this is before cell phones and all that type of shit. I start panicking. I have no idea where I'm at. I don't even know the city. I don't know what to do. What do you do there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like, and I don't want to start flagging out cars, because one time when I was even younger than that in California, we were throwing rocks over a street, and a guy, rock was nowhere near the car. He slammed on the brakes and chased me into my dad's house and scarred me. Yeah, dude. And then my dad went and tried to hunt him down. He was already gone. My dad was going to kill him. But anyway, so I didn't want to flag down a car. So I literally went and started knocking on doors. And this is the middle of the day in the summertime. Everybody's at work. Dude, I had to knock on so many doors. So someone finally answered. I just broke into tears and was like, I'm lost. But I didn't know her name. I didn't know her address. I knew my phone number at home. Nobody was there. I had no idea how to get a hold of this lady. And I had to go to the police station and sit there until someone called the police and asked, hey, is this fucking little kid up
there? You seen a little Korean boy?
Yeah, it was hours, dude. Hours I was there. It was the worst day. The absolute worst day. I had to sit there, and I remember it was cold somehow. It was like hot as fuck outside. Somehow it was still cold sitting on this bench in the police station. They were such assholes. Have
those police station blankets?
Like the shiny metal ones that they give to refugees?
Or just like any, I feel like anytime I see like a movie, anybody who's just undergone something, they get a blanket put around them.
No, they didn't give me anything. They just fucking, they didn't give a fuck, dude. They were,
motherfuckers.
Yeah, but I made it. I made it out of there, and I was never allowed to go to that school by myself again, ever again.
Yeah, you should not. To this day, you shouldn't.
I don't know if I know I have been there recently because my brother just took my son there to work on some pitching like 2 months ago. But as I pulled in the parking lot, I was like, damn, I haven't been here maybe since I got lost that day.
Did you get flashbacks?
No, I didn't. But no. Here's the thing. It wasn't even worth it. They didn't even have a real basketball hoop. They had one of those bullshit hoops that had like the 5 holes around it. It's like a big funnel.
Uh-huh.
And you get different points. I hated those things. Did you like, nobody liked playing on those, right?
No, I never, I don't remember any playgrounds that I frequented having anything like that.
You don't know what I'm talking about?
I know what you're talking about. I've seen them, but like as a kid, none of the ones I went to had it.
It's the dumbest game ever. It's like the game with the ball attached to the string. It's stupid. Nobody wants to play that.
What are you talking about? Tetherball?
Yeah, nobody wants to play tetherball.
Tetherball is a good time.
No, it's not.
Tetherball is a good time.
Isn't a solo, it's a solo game.
No, you play against each other. You stand on different sides and you hit it, and you try and hit it so that it wraps all the way around in your direction that you're hitting it.
Maybe I just never had any friends. Nobody wants to play tennis.
Some loser playing tennis ball solo.
Apparently, you didn't have any fucking friends. That's what it was.
This is not the best Reddit story, though. I mean, like, Reddit is difficult. I found a good one, that long one, but like, so much of the super fucked up stuff is gone. It got edited out. And then I found a bunch of really great stuff that is just so over the top, insanely gross that I could not bring that to our listeners. We would lose. But no, I'm talking the one that's kind of hot on Reddit lately is a guy that is uncut, and nobody told him to pull that down to wash.
Oh,
yeah. It is a very, very graphic story, and it is disgusting.
Yeah,
and that's okay, the kind of shit. Yeah, I can't bring that to us. There's another even worse one I can think of off the top of my head. It's like a legendary Redditor story. I don't think I do. I I like seeing like the extent of humanity, like the extremes, stuff you wouldn't think that people are going through. I want to know about, but like, no, I sit there and I ugh.
Nothing will ever touch the cockroach one. That one's awesome.
I mean, yeah, we started out so hot. That's just the weirdest fucking shit. I'll look for more tulpa stuff, see if I can find anything else, but that's the legendary tulpa story.
That was a fine one. That brought up a couple decent stories. And then we had the NBA one where they were murdering players. So that's
good. A great one. That's a good one.
All right, man. That's all I got. Wednesday, the 29th, Westals, go buy tickets now.
Yeah.
We had a Jimmy Graham to that show. I don't know if I told you that.
No, nice.
So yeah, me, you, Kyle, Dave, and Jimmy Graham on that show. That's going to be a killer lineup. That is Wednesday, the 29th at Westals. Go to their Facebook page, find the shitty flyer, Venmo your money into Ether. It's a great time. You're not gonna regret it. You got a couple dates coming up, right?
I mean, this weekend out in Indian Lake by Lima, and then Westals, and still working on some calendar stuff with Hilarities, and then perfect. March 14th, 15th, and 16th at the Funny Stop.
We're doing a podcast vacation for that one.
Good.
By the way, Chris, who used to help with all the social media stuff,
yeah,
was like, dude, I know some of the sketchiest hotels around there. I can get us a block of rooms. And he's like, I know something about a baby disappearing or some wild shit. Apparently he grew up down in that area and there's some sketchy shit down there. So,
oh yeah.
So that he'll be our travel guide. He'll be our travel guide.
Beautiful.
All right. I'm going to go rest this voice. So
you do that. See you later, buddy.